and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. And if you're listening for the first time today, I want to give you some background on if you've been listening for a long time, which I hope a lot of you have. I kind of want to update you on the background and why I do Focus on Business. I'm passionate about small businesses and really businesses of any size and making sure they're healthy, sustainable, profitable businesses that are enabled to give back to the community through wages, through their own purchases, through their investments, through everything that goes around as an economy around the business community. We are employed by businesses, we buy and sell to businesses, and there's just so much that's important about having a healthy business community to thrive and survive. This radio station is funded, at least in part, by donations and support underwriters that come from the business community. And so when we have a healthy business out there, a growing and thriving business, that enables the community to grow and thrive. And so my background is as a business owner for the past 13 years. I founded my company, Focus Resources, 13 years ago next week. And the challenges of starting a business post 9/11 and dot-com and all those kind of things, most people would have said, don't start a business then. And it turned out to be an ideal time to start a business because people needed people that know how to do business and do it well. And so in September 2002, I started my own business and have since in the past 13 years, and I want to thank every one of them, served over 500 client businesses. And it truly is a joy to work with each business on their specific needs, their unique perspective. And while businesses have things in common, each business is unique based on their business, their clientele, their owners, their employees. So it's the how they do business that becomes unique. You can sell the same product or service as 100 or 1,000 other businesses, but how you do that is what enables your business to grow and be sustainable. So I focused with my clients on business systems, on funding from private equity, from venture capitalists, angels, debt from banks, lines of credit, and government grants and contracts, and helping them be compliant and have sustainable operational assets that generate profits, cash flow, to fund their business growth. And that when they need to go outside for external funding, whether that's from investors or it's from the profits generated from their customers and what they're selling, they're in a position to go out and say, look, I know my customers, I know my market, I know what I'm doing, and this is why I'm a good bet to back, whether that's an equity investor or a loan from a bank or another source. I've written over 800 articles in the past 13 years and 6 books on marketing issues and business growth and things that are impacting how we do business. And I can't overstate the importance of understanding that the decisions you make from starting your business through running it and growing it become the decision factors, the basis of whether you grow or whether you go out of business, whether someone beats you in how they do business and are more successful. And so those articles are actually on my website, focusresourcesinc.com, and they're free. And you can see the different books out there. And from my first book, which was Out of the Cubicle and Into Business, I knew there were questions out there that I didn't know to ask when I started my business. And I knew there were books out there not addressing it. And so in 2004, I published that first book, knowing that was the book I had wanted to find on the bookstore shelf when I started my business. I could find business plan books, and I could find all these different types of books. But I didn't find books that personalized and took my professional background and my expertise and said, how do I do business with this? And what is that impact of starting my business? When and how quickly can I get my business up to a point that it's profitable to replace the salary I made in the corporate world? And so making that transition from being an employee to a business owner is important. Understanding how you set goals for your organization and how you enable that your business to grow, whether you're a spin-out of a university or you're a major corporation, and I've worked at all of those. The thing is to understand the mechanics of your business. Where do your revenues come from? Where are your costs generated? And how does that generate profits and build the case for external sources of capital to fund your business growth? The faster you want to grow, the more cash you're going to need. And so we talked about that on the August 25th show, so just last month, about being able to grow in any economy and how our financial information in our existing businesses can tell us how well we're doing, what customers we serve best, what customers are profitable for us, where does our expertise match up to market needs, why do our existing customers buy from us, and why are they willing to pay that price for the value that we provide. And so whether you're a big business, you know, on Wall Street or a small business on Main Street, you're concerned with having a thriving, sustainable business. Businesses that don't grow and don't change, whether they're a service firm or you sell products, whether you're online or you're a brick and mortar store, if you don't know where your customers are coming from and why they're buying from you and who that ideal customer is, then you're kind of randomly shooting in the dark trying to hit a target. And so combining goals and objectives, milestones with an expertise in your customer, not just your product or your service, but in your customer, your market, the competition. What are other people doing? What are your customers buying from other businesses? What are those businesses and why do they buy from them? You know, what makes the difference between someone who wants to buy an Apple computer and someone who chooses to buy a PC? It's understanding the demographics and the psychographics, for a term, of the buying decisions. How do the customers' passions, their emotions, their needs, their challenges, all of those things come into play for them choosing to do business with you? And so whether your business has been around for decades, centuries, or you're just getting started, you need to understand your ideal customer and how to get them and how to retain them. That is what makes the difference between building a sustainable, growing business and struggling to have the bills paid every month and eventually going out of business because you haven't been able to do that. So we're going to build today in the second in the series on business growth on that show that we did in August that was focused on how to grow your business in any economy and laying that financial foundation of understanding your current success and developing information on your ideal customers. On that show, just as a kind of a refresher on that, I was talking about the need to define the ideal customer based on your current results. And so where are you profitable? A lot of businesses just have tax information and financial reports for that purpose, or they might give one to the bank, but they fail to dig into and harvest all the real information that they need to from the history books, their financial books. Tell them what direction to go if we slice and dice that financial and tax information into managerial accounting information. So from your accounting information, we really want to know and be able to dissect where our revenues come from, where our costs are generated, and then to enable our organization to change and grow to do more of what we're good at and less of what's draining. So we want more sales and more activities that focus towards our ideal customer that's profitable, generates not only sales but cash flow and profits, and we want to know how we equip our organization to do that. What do our team members need to be doing? What systems do we need to be there to optimize our internal operations? And business systems are not one size fits all. Yes, we can all use QuickBooks pretty much, or we can use some other accounting software, or we can use Microsoft Office products and create spreadsheets and PowerPoint presentations and do all those kind of things. And so from that standpoint, the components of our systems may be the same in a lot of instances, but how we use them and what we need to use them for and what makes sense for our business and our expertise and our customers can differ greatly. So what we want to do in building a sustainable learning organization that's able to assess what we're doing, look at our financial information from a managerial and decision-making perspective, and then we're going to take that information and then we're going to say what's working in our organization and what's not. Because regardless of what size or stage we are in a business, there is one thing that is consistent in our business. We are always having more opportunities than we have cash flow. So we really need to understand our goals, our priorities, frame them in the terms of what we're good at, our ideal customers, how many customers we need, how profitable we need to be, and setting those goals, and then looking at our systems, whether that's our people, our computers, our inventory, anything and everything about how we do business, the mechanics of our business, and make sure that in reaching those customers and doing whatever we do, that we're optimizing those resources, those scarce, valuable, critical resources to the best advantage every moment of every day. And so a static business, or a business that has to be forced to change because we've always done it this way, is a business that's going to struggle to sustain itself, let alone grow. Because growth requires transformation of how the organization thinks, acts, and what it does to become an adaptive learning organization that is constantly engaged in monitoring what's going on in the marketplace. While you may not be a company traded on the stock market, it impacts you if there are significant downturns in the stock market, because people feel less inclined to spend their money when they see their retirement accounts and their investments going down. There can be indicators in the economy that says, okay, people are spending less, or people are going to be going out and doing more, or they feel more price pressure. They still need to buy things, but they're more price conscious than they are brand conscious. And so in monitoring our environment as a business, we want to look at the economic factors. We want to look at how easy it is to get capital to fund our growth. We want to look at what things are impacting our customers and learn to adapt and adjust how we offer our products for sale or our services are provided, so that we're adapting to those changing market conditions and the things that are impacting our customer base. And so while we're engaging in monitoring our results, what's working and what's not, do we do an advertising campaign in the traditional sources, or do we choose to do social media campaigns, or whatever we're doing, we need to be able to set metrics and track the results of that. So let's say you do two campaigns. You decide to do one social media and one traditional advertising and things of that nature, and you get sales in. So which one do you want to repeat? Well, if you're not capturing the information to say this sale comes from the social media campaign and this sale came from the traditional advertising, then you don't have information there to make an informed decision as to what worked and what didn't. You know the cost of what you did, but you don't know the return on what you did. And so you can't make a decision as to what you want to repeat. So you may end up spending more money, or you go with your gut instinct to say, okay, it came from social media because that's what everybody says is working, and you make the wrong decision. Because you need to tie what you've done to the financial information that is generated from that activity, whether that's generating a cost such as advertising, which I'll argue that any campaign that is marketing related is truly an investment. We might treat it as an expense from an accounting perspective. But we need to be out there looking for customers and really marketing our businesses and advertising in its various forms, social media. All the things that we do to generate business is really not optional in this day and age, but it is expensive and it can be complicated and time consuming. So again, we want to know what works and what doesn't and what's worth doing again, and stop spending money on what's not working. A few years ago, I was working with a appliance services plumbing business, and the customer he had defined, and his customer was an established home that had aging appliances and aging plumbing and all those kind of things. And when we sat down and started looking at what he was doing to market his business, it was completely different from where he said his customer base, he wanted his customer base to be. He was putting out materials in apartment complexes where the apartment occupant was not the decision maker. The owner of the apartments, the maintenance manager, were making the decisions as to what would be replaced and what would be repaired when and who would do it. He was also putting out materials with realtors who only focused on new build, and that was not where his specialty was. He was there to deal with the aging appliances. So, you know, that washer you want to make go a few more years, or a dishwasher that, you know, blows a gasket and floods everything. He was looking at those types of home repairs, and it was really making him realize that he was spending tens of thousands of dollars on marketing his business and advertising and putting campaigns out there, and he wasn't getting the result, because when the customer called and he said, well, that's a warranty item, you're in a new home, I don't do warranty calls, he was generating lots of traffic for prospective customers, but they weren't the customers he wanted to serve or the customers he specialized in serving. His expertise was the older appliances. He didn't do warranty repairs. So shifting his advertising, shifting his focus to find areas and find means of customers that were in established houses, that were older houses and needed more service, to find those right mixes of where to put his message, and then to give him metrics to say, find out where that lead from your website came from. Have a code there that they can say, well, they were referred by somebody, or they're an existing customer, or they saw this advertisement or this marketing campaign. Is important for him to hone in on what's working and what's not. To spend, in this case, he spent over $30,000 a year marketing his small business and wanting it to grow, and he was seeing it strangled because he was paying for leads, he was doing all this activity that was misdirected. And so the $30,000 quickly needed to become $10,000 or less and be more effective and more focused. So we don't take a shotgun approach to marketing our business. We want to take a laser focus to marketing a business. And that laser is focused based on that ideal customer, that target, that foundation that we find out from our past success. Or if we're a new business, and I want to talk about new businesses that can't go into their financial data and say, okay, what's been working? It's in looking at that ideal customer, and that ideal customer comes not from deciding what service or product you're going to apply and then looking around to see who you can get to buy. Finding that ideal first customer in the target market that you want your new business to go after is a product of understanding what, again, being an expert in the market, what is out there that your expertise, your product or your service, your technology can address, that's an existing need that's not being addressed or not fully addressed, or you can address cheaper, faster, something. So you need to look for a need and a problem in the market and then design based on your expertise and what you have to offer, solve that problem. We don't start businesses and then look around and see if we find customers. At least I hope we don't, although many of my clients in the past have been those businesses that opened their doors and then started looking for a customer. We want to find the need. We want to find the market demand. We want to find the people looking to buy at a price that will generate a profit for us, and then create an answer for them, create a solution, solve their problem, find something that will fit that need that they have, and then that's the business we're in. So when I started my business 13 years ago, my business expertise was business systems, was cost accounting and accounting systems, finance, operations, and running and managing profit centers in large organizations and some spinouts. And so it was basically putting the discipline of doing business and finding the right how to go with the why we're in business. And so I started my business after finding the need, after getting asked to start a business by several different companies. And I learned a lot with those early assignments, because I also learned not every business is started with an acknowledgement that there has to be a need or demand there. A business starts, and even businesses that have been around and been successful for decades can have started that way, and they happened into something that generated a sustainable business model. My biggest client down in Mexico is a good example. They have been around for hundreds of years, very large, very privately owned, very large, widespread globally company. And they started with an expertise in a certain field, and they grew from that, and they acquired, and they went around, but then suddenly their business model no longer worked. And so I went down there with them to understand that what they were trying to fix was not the problem. They were looking at symptoms. So logistics and delivery might have been the symptom, and there was a consequence to that. But the reality was the they had a mismatch between how their business operated and how they competed versus how the market was now. Not when they started the business or over the 100 years they've been running the business. It was looking at how their organization was operating, competing, and doing business now. In an age of instantaneous delivery, of organizations like Amazon and others looking to give you same delivery and even drone delivery, an organization, no matter how successful it has been in the past, has to learn to grow and adapt and change and be able to deliver a new how when the existing systems no longer work to do business. So what do you want to do? The steps are clear in what successful businesses do. They set clear goals. They know their customer. They know their results. They know what's generating cash. They know where their profits are. They know what activities cost them. They are able to say what works and what doesn't. And my first big experience exposed to this was at Ford Motor Company. I won't say how many decades ago. But going into their controllership operations and working with the plants and realizing that they not only knew how much it costs to produce a product now, but we learned to be able to know what a product was going to cost 5 or 10 years from now. And that required us to understand purchasing and procurement practices, economics, sourcing of raw materials, labor contracts, and all the things about how the business executed. And so in looking at that cost data, that we had strong product cost data that was, you know, materials cost for aluminum, for steel, everything was known and fairly predictive within a small variance for years out. What we weren't really clear on at that time, and what I became part of the process was the cost of different activities we engaged in at the plants. So whether that was a continuous improvement program, whether that was a marketing program, there were all different types of things that went in the course of supporting production and making the product. We weren't as aware of the activity costs and what really generated our costs beyond the direct labor of the product being made and the direct materials going into that product. And so when we started doing the activity costing and peeling back those layers and understanding the relationships between what we did and where those costs either would flow into the product and be able to recover it in price, or they were costs over and above that we really couldn't pass on to the customer in price. And so we needed to be even more cognizant of how we manage those activities. Because those activities many times could not go away or be eliminated. They were necessary to how we did business. But the reality was the market would not always bear the burden, the load of costs that were associated with necessary activities for the organization. And so taking that information and understanding, we put in a system, we need to know how to use that system, and we need to clearly understand the relationship between the cost of advertising, the revenues it generates, the value the customer sees, and the price the customer is willing to pay. We need to boil that down not just to product and service costs, which are critical for us to understand too, but into our activity costs. Where are we generating costs that impact the business and the profitability? Direct costs are normally one-to-one relationships, and let's talk about that a little bit. If I don't do a project, a direct cost goes away. So if I don't have Project A, any cost directly associated and caused by Project A goes away. But the costs of being in business don't. Those are our fixed costs, our indirect costs a lot of times. So a fixed cost means our rent's there, our utilities are there, our payroll is there to a large extent, regardless of what projects we have or what products we're selling. And so those core set of costs are necessary to be in business. How we do business and how we produce the products and services are the direct costs based on either the product or the specific production of a unit of a product or the technology or the software. Whatever we're doing, there's a one-to-one relationship between the things that we purchase or acquire to do that specific project. But there's a shared cost of those doing business costs that we have to understand, that we have to be lean, focused, laser focused on doing those activities that are those shared costs that get spread across products and services. And so when we're looking at our business to grow, the more adaptable, lean, focused, and efficient we are in those how we do business services, the better off our profitability picture is going to look. So we need to identify and define our ideal customer in terms of that profitability and that model of how we plan to do business. And that usually requires us to do something that a lot of people hate to do. And I constantly hear arguments about the investment in doing this, but in creating budgets and business plans. Who do we plan to serve? What is our budget for operating our business? And how do we make that connection between how we're doing the business, how we plan to do business, and then look at the reality of the results of that plan? And so a business plan is not a one-time document. It's a living, breathing document that we change based on new information. A budget enables us to know what we planned and how it was financially represented from that business plan and how we did based on those results. And we continually update it. Again, when I was at Ford and at some of the smaller companies I worked at, every month we took a look at what was planned operations and what actually happened. And then we made adjustments on the decisions of what activities we were going to engage in, how much of a larger push or did we need to pull back on sales, what was going on. Because our capacity to support what we were doing, the cost of what we were doing, had to mesh well with the customer's purchasing patterns. Or we weren't generating cash flow and we weren't generating profits. And so I would rather be in a smaller profitable business than a large unprofitable business. And so we build on that foundation. We build on that understanding that everything we do or don't do in our business ends up reflected in our financial statements. And so to build sustainable, optimal growth, we need to look at our financial picture and understand how much cash do we have available to support the capacity that we need to reach that sales figure. And I think I've used this example before, but say you have a goal of $1 million in sales. Well, if your product you sell is a dollar, you need to sell 1 million units of that product. So how much activity does it take to generate 1 million units in sales? Well, if each person only buys one, then you need 1 million customers. If the average customer, your ideal customer, buys 100 of those at a time, then you need a different number, right? And so we need to understand price and volume when we set a sales figure. And then from that volume and our target, we need to take that volume number, that how much activity we have to do, and translate that back into our capacity. What resources, staffing, equipment, activities for sales, how many salespeople do we need? What do they need to be equipped with? What do our production people need to be doing? Or if we're selling services, how many people do we have to have on staff to fulfill those orders for clients for, let's say, consulting services or security services? We need to be able to equate our sales dollar number target into an activity or volume target that equates back to people, equipment, dollars, to acquire the people and the equipment and the things that we're doing. And so clear growth goals based on the key performance indicators for our business will generally translate into at least four elements. Revenues, which is a target most businesses automatically set. Profitability, how much is our profit either by percentages or dollars based on that revenue target do we want to achieve? And again, that's going to drive us back to what cost structure can we have? How many people can we employ? How much equipment can we buy, etc.? And again, growth is funded by cash. So internally generated cash flow is critical. So having a cash flow target. One project I've been working with clients, we've also added a cash reserves number because there's some seasonality to their business. And so they need a cushion in the bank for those months when sales aren't covering those operating how-to expenses, those being in business expenses, because their retail is a great example. We have Black Friday in the day after Thanksgiving in retail because the majority of their sales and the majority of retailers become profitable the day after Thanksgiving. for the Christmas season. Others may be profitable in the summer. If you have a skiing business, well, you're not skiing in the summer in this part of the hemisphere. So you have to understand those seasonal effects and other impacts. And so having cash reserves was a goal we had to set for a client. And in that project, we had the decision made that we needed at least 2 months of cash reserves on hand at any given time to deal with those fluctuations in purchasing patterns from government entities that were slow to issue checks and those types of things. So understanding what is the key performance indicators and your goals for those revenues, profits, cash flow, cash reserves, capacity utilization for manufacturers. Idle capacity is costly capacity. And so, again, each business may have common things like revenue and profits and cash flow targets, but you also have specific things like cash reserve requirements that you want to keep on hand to settle bills, to pay the bills whenever there are ebbs and flows. Perhaps you have a tax bill that needs to be paid, and you need to have a target of paying down a debt over a period of time that you want reduced in half by the current year, etc. And so again, setting those targets gets back to telling us how we do business. And after the break, I'm going to pick up on that topic and address just how do we want to do business at any given date and any given time, and what is the cost of doing business.
Community Radio is supported by listeners like you, organizations and companies in our community. Focus Resources supports Focus on Business and is our underwriter for today's program. We'd like to thank Focus Resources, and if you'd like to learn more about this organization that supports WCFM and underwrites Focus on Business, you can visit their website, focusresourcesinc.com. Thanks to Focus Resources and all the station's underwriters.
WCOM-FM and Focus on Business are proud to support Make-A-Wish of Eastern North Carolina, serving the Triangle. Make-A-Wish of Eastern North Carolina is your community Make-A-Wish. To learn more about what Make-A-Wish is doing, visit their website at www.eastnc.wish.org. That's www.eastnc.wish.org, or give them a call at 1-800-432-WISH. That's 1-800-432-9474. Focus on Business and WCOM-FM are proud to support the Ronald McDonald House of Durham. To learn more about the Ronald McDonald House of Durham, visit their website at www.ronaldhousedurham.org. That's www.ronaldhousedurham.org, or give them a call at 919-281-1065.
And as always, we ask you to support Community Radio, WCOM-FM. You can go to our website, WCOMFM.org, to learn how to become an underwriter or to just simply donate. And we do always appreciate every dollar that you donate to support Community Radio here at WCOM-FM LP 103.5, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. Before the break, I was talking about setting specific key indicators that are best for your business. Revenues, profit, cash flow, cash reserves, and making those decisions of what we're going to do and how we're going to do business to adjust to those objectives, and translating the dollar goals back into activity goals of how many people, how many units have to be sold, and all of those kind of decisions that are unique to your business. And there's something else that's important about that in establishing those growth goals of revenue, profit, cash flow, cash reserves, is to look at the milestones and the timelines. With most of the clients, we examine these on a monthly basis as they produce their financial results for the month. We look to see how were they doing. So if we had $1 million sales goal for the year and everything was fairly even in how we expected those sales to be, when we've reached the end of August, how have we done for the year? We're 8 months into the year. If we still want to meet our $1 million goal, and let's say we should have $800,000 of the sales for the year to make it simple. That was $100,000 for the first 8 months each month. Are we there? And if we're not, how much do we need to make up? Do we know why we didn't hit the $100,000 a month goal? What is happening? What in our processes are holding us back? Let's say we made the sales goal. We've been $100,000 a month and we're in great shape for sales, but we've had a 10% profit goal. And what we find is we have 4% profit. What does that tell us and where does it tell us to look? It tells us to go back and look at the pricing of those deals, of the incentives we gave for the sales, and the actual direct cost, that one-to-one relationship of the price of the inputs into whatever we've sold, whether that's labor, whether that's an acquisition of a pre-manufactured product and we're turning around and selling it. What's going on that we can hit our sales goal, but we're missing our profitability goal? Let's say we hit sales and profits, but we don't have cash flow. We're getting ready to make payroll. We need to pay one of our vendors for the inventory we've bought from them, and there's no cash in the bank. Critical issue, especially if we don't have cash reserves in the bank. And so what's happening? We need to be looking at the interconnectivity of our goals, our activities, and our objectives. Maybe our customer no longer wants to pay the price we've been able to charge in the past because there's some alternative product for them to do, or someone else has entered the marketplace that has a lower cost structure and can offer things at a cheaper price. And we need, again, to be monitoring our environment. What is the competition doing? How are people making their purchase decisions, and what are the factors that are impacting and maybe driving down the price of that we're able to charge? Or perhaps we're able to charge that price, the costs are fine, our profits are fine, and the cash flow is not flowing because of a policy we've established for extending credit. Maybe we went from 15 days terms that you need to pay your bill within 15 days, or you were having more people pay cash at the time of purchase, and now people are taking it on terms, 30, 60, 90 days, and you didn't take in consideration the cash timing of the cash flow coming in. Well, let's say your terms are just fine, but your customers just aren't paying their bills. What do you need to do activity-wise to address those situations? And there are frequent occurrences where businesses have cash flow issues, where there's not cash in the bank, especially during growth periods. And so again, the more robust your plan is for your business, the more financial history you have of knowing and successfully growing your business, the more likely you'll be able to address short-term cash flow issues through a relationship with a bank or other lender to give you working capital to get through those little blips up and down that may occur during your operating year. But again, if you don't have a business plan, if you can't articulate about what's impacting your business, what's going through the market, and why it's not going to continue, and why you are going to have the cash coming in and then to pay the bills, and it's just a timing issue, if you don't have those answers, if you don't have a document, if you don't have the ability to have a conversation about how well you know your business, how well you know the marketplace and your customers, you're going to have less access to capital, and what capital you have access to is going to be much more expensive because of the risk that's perceived for someone. So in that example, we were talking about our revenues are fine, our profits might be fine, our cash flows might be fine at this point, but we've successfully reached our $1 million goal, everything's great, and we're looking to next year because we are in the last month of the third quarter. We should start looking ahead to the next year, making the plan for next year, talking about our budget, talking about what our goals are for next year at this point. And we look down and we realize, well, I want to be $1.5 million sales business next year, maintaining that 10% profit, having that 2 months of cash reserve, having the cash flow. But we look down and we start generating the information looking from that sales target to how much production we have to have. And let's, again, keep a simple example. If we want $1.5 million in sales and we're selling a product that costs a dollar, we need to sell and produce 1.5 million units. Well, we find our capacity is only at 1.2 million. So we have a decision to make. Are we only going to grow to our maximum capacity of 1.2 million units, or are we going to make the decision to invest in new capacity? And let's say we make the decision we really want to be a $1.5 million company this year, and the next year we want to be $2 million, and the next year we want to be $3 million. So that means more capacity. So we sit down and we start developing a business plan, and we start saying, well, where do we need to add the capacity? The mistake that people and organizations make in expanding and adding capacity is not understanding where they need to add it. Capacity is added at the constrained or bottlenecked resource. So you don't need to add another accountant if your existing accountant can handle the workload. But you may need to add a couple more salespeople to generate the sales to sell that new capacity you're adding. You will probably need to add a couple more people to actually work on the orders or do the production of the units if you're manufacturing them, or if you're a service provider, you need to add people in to help deliver the services. And so making a plan and then understanding that investment. How much is it going to cost me from going to a $1.2 million capacity to a $1.5 million capacity? From 1.2 million units to 1.5 million units. And then how much other capacity is there? Because we're not going to just add 300,000 units of capacity. In our example, let's say you can only add another $2 million in capacity. There's no small increment. You're either at, now you had 1 million, 1.2 million in capacity. Well, the way systems are now and things you need to add, it's going to be 2 million units that are added. Well, how long will it take you to be selling those 2 million units? What is the cost of putting those 2 million units in? Do you need to revise the number and say, okay, I don't want to be a $1.5 million company this next year. I want to be a $2 million company. What's that look like? You have to run through that process of equating operating decisions, acquisition of capacity, equipment, people, to dollars and cents. And you have to take that and put it on a milestone and a timeline. Very few companies could add 2 million units in capacity and sell every one of them out the next day. Not only that, they're going to start building that capacity. Capacity typically is not instantly available and instantly efficient. So let's switch to a manufacturing example because I think it's probably a bit more tangible. You add capacity. You have to build onto your building. You have to acquire production lines. You have to source raw materials. You have to buy some purchased parts that would put those raw materials together. You need to hire and train new workers. You get the picture. There's a lot of things you have to do. You're not going to do that in a few weeks. So let's say it would take you a year to add that capacity. Well, if you started the project now, sitting here in the middle of September, you're going to have the capacity online in the middle of next September. So what happens? Well, you're going to have expenses. You're going to have the expense of the building expansion. You're going to have expense of the equipment being ordered, at least deposits on things, progress payments on building and construction. You're going to have new employees at some point. You're going to have the equipment in place. Everything's going to work. You're going to have inventory coming in, but you're still not going to be productive because you have to train people. Let's say you're going to move some of your existing workforce into the new production, and you're going to put some of the new employees in with the old employees. Well, now you have another issue, because now everyone in your existing operation will not be operating as efficiently because they'll be training and losing time to the new people learning the how things are done. And so you have to understand the timing and the milestones. If I started a bidding process even today to get quotes for how much it's going to cost to add on, if I started getting quotes for volumes on raw materials just for the construction of the building, there's a timing to that. No decision we make in this day and age is instantaneous in its result and the product it produces. If I choose to add 2 million units in production, it will take time before it's even available to produce, and it will take time to be efficient, and it will be take time to be fully utilized. So what happens in that time? You add the capacity, and it can be a year or more before it comes online, but you have expenses, you have cash flow demand on that. And it could be a year or more before that capacity is actually producing profitability for that. And the impact on the existing operations can also mean you pull back from being 1 million units in sales or 1.2 million in sales, and now you find yourself you're only selling 800,000 units because your organization is disrupted from how it had always had been operating, and adding this new capacity created a slowdown. So we have to understand the timing, the cost of additional capacity. We're making an investment that may not pay off as quickly as we would like, and we need to understand that in the plan. So in growing our business, we have how we are now, the vision of what we want to be and become, and we need to translate that into a business plan that is operational and functional and translates into a financial quantification of those decisions. And that quantification of those decisions also means timing cash flows out and into the organization. It also asks us to step back and take a look at our activities and our cost structure. As I talked about before, when I was at Ford Motor Company, we were looking at our cost structure, and the activity of adding capacity can change the entire cost structure and will change the entire cost structure of your business. People will always want to say, but economies of scale, I'm producing more. Economies of scale are great when you're producing more on your existing equipment. When you add a step function increase to your business of capacity, economies of scale do not necessarily kick in until that capacity is fully integrated and fully utilized. And so we will frequently have a step function, you know, like going up the steps, we'll have a straight line up increase in our costs and our cost structure long before our profitability and our sales catch up to cover that new capacity. So we need to understand the impact of that additional investment on our cost structure, whether we can recover any of it in pricing, and on our management resources. We have the expense, we have the lag time, and then we have the time to recovering the cost because we are now capable of selling from that new capacity. So what is the starting point for your organization to grow? The real bottom line starting point for your organization to grow is to know your industry and your customer, and to know your business. The more of an expert you are in those three dimensions, the marketplace, which includes your competition, sourcing, and economic factors, your industry, your customer, the more successful you're going to be in making decisions on how you're going to operate, how you're going to structure your financial targets, how you're going to structure your financial system, how you're going to gather information from your system on new customers, the prospect, how big a market is that, what new products or services, your added capacity, what activities new and existing that are going to continue, and how are you going to execute those, what works and what doesn't, and your ability to get the information out of your financial and accounting system in a managerial type report that says, these are my projects, these are my customers, this is how much profit I made on this project, this is how much profit I made from this customer, this is how the cash flowed out of those projects. The more information you have about that, the more ability you have to adapt and make new decisions to do more of what works, to do less of what doesn't work. Too many businesses are focused on making sure they have the tax-based information, which is important. I'm not going to say it's not. We have to file our taxes. We have to pay our taxes. But tax-based financial information in your business is not decision-making information in your business, except for the case of deciding how you're going to manage your tax liabilities and make decisions that impact that. We need managerial cost activity-based information. We need to know the profitability of our customers. We need to understand the profitability of products, business lines, projects. However we're doing business, we need to be able to translate that information of what we've done into what results we've generated. And our scorecard is our financial statement. It just needs to be sliced and diced to a managerial perspective. That can be done in pretty much any accounting software you have. It can be done with a spreadsheet. If your accounting system does not generate that information, a lot of the information that you can generate in your accounting system for financial and tax purposes can normally be exported into a spreadsheet or an Access database or some other tool to enable you to manage and slice and dice that data. So whether you're producing cars, whether you're producing widgets, whether you're a restaurant trying to figure out the capacity of the restaurant, how much each meal costs, what are your inputs, how many people you need on staff, what are your hours, whatever it is you're in business to do, understanding how you do business and how that impacts your financial and cost structures is critical to being equipped, positioned, and ready to grow. Growth requires cash. And so you have to understand the revenue-generating activities and the necessary required activities of your business that are non-revenue-generating but support the process of generating revenue, and be as efficient as possible in all of the activities that you're engaging in. But if you don't know what the cost of some activity is, if you don't know how the cost of doing business with a certain customer, then you're making instinctive decisions on less than ideal information, because you're not making them on information, the realities and the products, the byproduct of what you've been doing. You're making them on an instinct that may be misguided or wishful thinking. So the more we're able to translate and understand our financial information to, not necessarily this is a debit and this is a credit, but to understand, I generated this revenue, it came from these 20 customers, of those 20 customers, only 15 of them were profitable, and on the five projects or the five customers that weren't profitable, we now know why. We underpriced, we gave too many incentives, we extended too long of credit terms, and we had to finance the working capital for that period, and that cost went in to make those customers unprofitable. And you're thinking, wait a minute, my borrowing money doesn't have anything to do with five customers, it has to do with the whole business. Not really. The reality is, when you're financing your business, the cost of that financing needs to be attached to whatever triggered it, that cost hierarchy, that activity or choice that translated to cause you to have that cost. If you had not had those five unprofitable customers, maybe you wouldn't have borrowed the money to cause the interest in the payments and things. And so again, the more you know your business, the more you know your expenses, the more you attach a cost driver to a project, the more you can make the relationship that this decision tied to this customer or this product line or this activity, this cost is associated with that, the more you're going to make informed decisions that improve your revenues, that improve your profitability, that improve cash flow, that make sure there's money in the bank when there are glitches or when something doesn't work quite as expected or something breaks down. That is the long-term perspective on growing your business, to be viable, to be productive, to be sustainable, to have the revenues to add more capacity, the cash flow to pay the bills, to give raises to your employees, to support community radio, to whatever it is you want to do with your profits and your cash flows. It doesn't matter if you're a $5 million company or a $50,000 company at this point. You can do what you need to do if you take the time to look at your financials, to get that basic understanding. And I ran a lot of workshops over the past over a decade now on understanding financial information for non-financial people. You don't have to be an accountant, and you don't have to understand the difference between debits and credits and journal entries. You have to be able to read your own financial statement. You have to be able to ask your accountant to produce the information that you need to make the decisions on your business. One of my professors that I adored in undergrad, he was a former VP of Johnson & Johnson in their international division. He ran many companies successfully, and I can remember him talking about a business that he ended up owning because he was brought in to manage it. The owners weren't quite doing what they were supposed to be doing, and over time, rather than paying, they gave him ownership, and eventually he was a majority owner of the company. He ran that business with one piece of paper that was given to him every morning. It told him about sales for the period, for year to date. It told him about his cost structures. It told him about his capacity, how much was being utilized. It taught him about pipeline of orders from new customers and existing customers. He had on that one piece of paper that his accountant put on his desk every morning and along with his sales manager that says, these are the activities you're engaged in. This is how many units we've sold. This is the price. This is our profitability. This is what we have ahead of us. This is where we're running for capacity. That one page summarized all the activities he needed to know that his business was engaged in. And based on that daily information, they can make informed decisions as to what the priorities were for the rest of the year, for the rest of the performance period, and for that day. If there was a fire to be fought, he could fight that fire. So if you want to grow your business, become an expert in your business, become an expert in your market, in your customer, in the problem that you can solve. Get to know everything you can about anything and everything that impacts your business, but especially become an expert in your own financial reports and get wise about making the connection between what you do, how you do it, and those numbers that you're seeing in your accounting system. And on that one page that's on your desk, that's your financial report for the day. Until next time, everyone, I want you to stay focused on the important things. And remember that WCOM-FMLP is here and it's your community radio station. And we ask that for your support as an underwriter for this show or the station. The information is on the WCOMFM.org website. And until next time, everyone, stay focused on the important things.